Earth, sky.
Scenario planning recognizes that people make choices. Political choices, individual choices, consumer choices. And those actually can help shape different futures. And so it gives us a broader range of appreciation of the potential future landscape around which we can think through our decisions.
You're listening to Jeremy Bentham, Vice President, Global Business Environment for Royal Dutch Shell, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science, with a special program in partnership with Shell. Scenario building is a way of looking to the future. Corporations like Shell, and increasingly the public and private sectors, use scenario building for decision-making. Shell was a pioneer in this field. Its early efforts at scenario planning let it anticipate the rise and subsequent fall of oil prices in the 1970s. Jeremy Bentham leads scenario building for Shell. He told us how scenario planning has caused Shell to believe that collaboration between civil society and the public and private sectors is vital to addressing economic, energy, and environmental challenges in the years ahead. Bentham spoke about Shell scenarios and about what they call a zone of uncertainty related to energy supply and demand between now and 2050 with Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar.
Mr. Bentham, welcome to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science.
It's wonderful to be able to have this opportunity to speak with you.
What is scenario planning and why is this important to Shell?
Scenario planning is one of the approaches that we use to help give our most senior decision makers a richer appreciation of the fundamental drivers and the fundamental uncertainties around our business. And that involves thinking very deeply about the world energy system, the environmental system, political and economic systems as well. And I think there's probably five contributions it can make. First of all, it helps make that richer appreciation, better decisions. Secondly, it really helps test the robustness of our strategies. I think thirdly, it identifies potential threats for our business, but also opportunities, things that we may not have noticed unless we'd had that richer exploration. Over time, of course, it helps our senior leaders be more flexible and more responsive to uncertainty because we build up a broader appreciation of the uncertainties, the potential discontinuities in our business. And I think finally, because we look at the world really quite deeply through a variety of different perspectives and about the way that different choices that people make can help shape different understanding, different developments in the world, in the global systems, it helps us look into the background and bring it into the foreground of our thinking, elements that we might not have appreciated so quickly if we hadn't done that.
You first published your energy scenarios to 2050 3 years ago. What did the outlook look like back then?
I think the outlook was being driven by what we called three hard truths. First of all, the growth in population and prosperity, which was bringing hundreds of millions of people out of dire material poverty, which is a good thing, naturally had accompaniment of various stresses and pressures. So that included pressure on all commodities, including energy, so a surge in energy demand, and also then how quickly could supply also respond to that demand, given natural, geological, geographical, and political constraints? And also, what impact would this have on the environmental system? So our scenarios from 3 years ago explored that ground and recognized that the two major patterns of choice determined how quickly or sluggishly we changed the fundamental underpinning of the regulatory system and the technological deployments that underpinned the energy system.
Tell us more about these two major patterns of choice that you mentioned.
So when we looked at the possibilities of what was shaping the energy system, we recognized two patterns of choice that we called scramble and blueprints. These are actually fairly important archetypes of response to stresses and to change. In the scramble environment, It recognizes that these are very complex pressures and that people naturally look towards institutions to try and manage them on their behalf. The natural institutions being national governments, and they have different policy levers that they can pull. The easiest ones to pull are around supply, around encouraging local supplies, whether that's coal or whether that's a biomass, if there's a biomass resource, or if it's gas, if it's a gas resource. It's much more difficult politically to respond to demand pressures and pull levers of policy on demand. And the environmental levers are still being invented. So you get a sequential set of responses to pressures, which leads to a period of discontinuities and actually relatively slow change in the environmental and other responses to the pressures of what we called those three hard truths. The blueprint's pattern of behavior recognizes that other actors also play a role and has a more emphasis on those other actors alongside the national governments. So you see emerging coalitions, for example, between entrepreneurs, environmental groups, also then as a patchwork of developments begins to occur, you get another dynamic, which is that policymakers and industrialists recognize that patchworks inhibit trade, inhibit investment, and you get a harmonization of developments, which actually, once it reaches critical mass, drives forward more quickly developments in the regulatory system and in that technological deployment of technological capabilities.
Based on this latest piece of energy analysis work called Signals and Signposts, what major changes do you see?
Yes, our latest piece of work are not new energy scenarios. They just recognize that in the 3 years since those scramble and blueprint scenarios were produced, a lot has happened. We've had a financial crisis, we've had an economic slump, and we've also had the emergence of some new developments. These don't change the fundamental drivers and uncertainties explored in the energy scenarios, but they bring new things to the fore. And probably, if I was just to summarize quickly, four new things that are really to the fore. First of all, we believe that we've moved from a situation of relative economic moderation in the period from the 1980s through to the mid-2000s into a future which has much more structural economic volatility. Secondly, we see greater regulatory uncertainty. For example, in the environmental field, we see a political divergence between the majority scientific community, who are more pessimistic about the impact of emissions on climate and the environment, and yet a public sentiment which has largely drifted away from that being at the top of their priorities. And that political divergence can't continue indefinitely, and that brings regulatory uncertainty. And also, of course, the ripples from the tragedy in the Gulf of Mexico bring regulatory uncertainty as well. I think thirdly, we have to highlight the spectacular breakthroughs in the development of shale gas and tight gas reserves in North America, which have ripples well beyond North America as they make more gas available elsewhere in the world and also encourage the development of similar resources elsewhere in the world. And finally, although it's not perhaps such a big an impact as the gas revolution, I'd highlight the opening up of the Iraq oil industry and the impact that that might have, both in terms of bringing new resources forward more quickly, but also clearly the uncertainties that creates within an organization such as OPEC as how to best manage the OPEC interests with this new production being made available.
The supply and demand pressures are behind something you've called the zone of uncertainty.
Yes, I'd like to say a little bit more about what we call the zone of uncertainty. And this is really capturing something about the tensions in supply and demand developments for energy looking forward, but also relates into the environmental space as well. If we were to take the energy system and the supply-demand balance in 2000 and look forward to 2050 and just assume that you have a historical pattern of development according to economic development that's anticipated in that time, you'd be using about three times as much energy as today. At the same time, if you actually look at the supply side of the equation, natural resources are being used and utilized. Depleting, it means you have to run fast just to stand still. And if it was just a question of ordinary supply developments, you might actually get a growth of a little bit more than 50% by 2050. Now, demand won't grow to three times as much, and natural competition and innovation will reduce that pace of demand growth. But we anticipate still between ordinarily accelerated production growth and ordinarily moderated demand growth, there's a zone of uncertainty, which is actually about the same size as the whole energy industry in 2000, which still needs to be bridged by a combination of extraordinarily accelerated production growth and extraordinarily moderated demand moderation. And these are very, very significant, the choices that are made about whether that will be a zone of opportunity or a zone of misery. Looking at the zone of uncertainty and considering the developments on the supply side, one of the developments that's been really, really helpful in the last few years has been the spectacular breakthrough in the production of natural gas from so-called tight gas and shale gas and in parts of the world, coal bed methane, which is very, very helpful, not only in terms of being a bigger resource that's available than we thought just a few years ago, but also because it's a relatively low carbon resource that can be very, very advantageously applied at scale quickly, which is very important for reducing cumulative greenhouse gas emissions looking forward. And so I think that that is an important development and one of the biggest, fastest things that can be done to alleviate some of the environmental stresses would be a deeper acceleration in the use of natural gas, supplanting what would otherwise be the continuing acceleration of the use of coal in power generation.
You've been listening to Jeremy Bentham, Vice President Global Business Environment for Shell, talking about Shell's work in building scenarios of alternate possible futures as they relate to global energy. Our thanks today to Shell, encouraging dialogue on the energy challenge. For this and other free science interview podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.